This podcast is from Allegro Non Troppo on Joy Melbourne 94.9 radio station, Melbourne, Australia, and is produced for you by Adam, Peter and Robert. This edition of Allegro Non Troppo is rebroadcast from a show that went to air on 3JOY in 2005. It concerns the escape from Iran of Amin, who left Iran fearing for his life just after two teenage boys were publicly hanged for being homosexual. The situation in Iran is not clear to us. There are too many stories like this one you are about to hear. But also coming out via the internet, we hear stories of defiant groups of people whilst living in fear and hiding that do not want to flee their homeland. This Allegro Non Troppo is an important reminder of the global situations for other gay and lesbian communities, and to them we send our most sincere hopes for a better life for all people living in fear. Over the last few weeks, we've been recounting a story that sent absolute shudders and waves of horror throughout the world. And it was the fact that there were two Iranian teenagers were executed a few weeks ago. What happened was, as we understand it, that these two boys were detained by the authorities in Iran, and they were imprisoned for a couple of years. They were regularly tortured and beaten. And then at the end of the two-year period, they were taken into the town square and they were hung. Everybody's sort of screaming, oh, this is terrible, this is awful, their only crime was that they were teenage, they were gay, they were having sex together, whatever. There's been other stories going around that they'd held a 13-year-old boy at knife point and these two boys plus a few others had gang-raped a 13-year-old. Whatever. The first casualty in things like this is truth. Mm-hmm. We don't know what the truth is. All we know is what we're fed. But what we do know, and it's reasonable to assume is fact, is that two teenage boys were executed who were gay. The crime was mainly that they were gay. And that this follows on the extremist law that is the Sharia Muslim law. Now, I was horrified, and it's been on my mind for some time, to think that there are men and women around the world, gay men and women, who live in this absolute fear and live in a society like that. And I just don't understand how people can live like that. I mean, we live here in Australia and we're just so lucky.
Yes, indeed.
But there are people who are brought up and they live in a society like this and they turn and they find out they're gay. What must happen? What do they go through? To this end, I've invited on the show Amin, who's going to tell us a bit about his experiences and his thoughts on all of this. Amin is from Iran. Good morning, Amin.
Good morning, Adam.
Welcome to Allegro.
Thank you very much.
This is your first time on radio.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, and we also understand that you're a little bit concerned for your own personal safety and your family's safety.
Yes, that is.
In Iran. So we're going to be fairly circumspect. We're not going to identify you.
That's all
okay,
right.
Or your family, and we don't want you to give out any personal information mm-hmm. that may lead you or your family into any trouble.
Thanks very much, Adam.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we're very aware and we're very respectful of the fact that you're here sharing your story, but you are putting yourself in an amount of danger. Okay, so
thanks very much.
Thank you for doing that, and please, let's see how we go. Our special guest on Allegro today is Amin, who has just escaped from Iran. Amin, you come from Iran. How old were you when you realized you were gay?
It was about 11 or 12 years old. Mm-hmm. Really, it was the first time I really thought that I have some emotional feelings towards men.
Right. Were you aware of how the law was in your country about gay people at that time?
No, by that time I didn't know because I was just 11 or 12 years old and I was just thinking that for a while I was thinking that I'm the only one who has got these feelings. So I was thinking that what is wrong with me or why I should be like, I was considering myself very strange.
Mm-hmm. As you grew up and you became more aware of your sexuality, did you start to become a bit more frightened?
Yes, because when I was hearing about the news and we had this awful incidents in my country and we were hearing them in the news, so I was a bit scary and I was telling myself, okay, I'm having the same feelings and it can happen to me too.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's very scary.
Did you grow up in the country or did you grow up in a city?
I grew up in a city.
Okay, so in the city it's probably you would hear and see more about it then.
Yes.
Did you, when you were growing up in this time in your life, did you actually see anything happen? Was there any...
Yes, there was... when I was in primary school, I remember there was someone who was working in our school, actually. He was having sex with someone who was 18 years old. And actually, he was our bus driver, who was driving us to the school and driving us back to home. And he were hung up. He was hung up in the public.
So they executed him publicly? They
executed him publicly. And I remember, because he was, I knew him very well. And it really affected me. And
that must have been the most terrifying ordeal.
Yes.
For you, just coming to grips with your sexuality, recognizing somebody who's gay, and then suddenly seeing them treated like that.
Yes.
What was the reaction of the people in the town around you to this execution?
Unfortunately, I went to the scene with some of my friends because we knew where is the execution. And we went to that scene, and it was very busy, very crowded, and the police decided not to hang it in public. So, because there were so many children, and they decided not to do that in public. But there was forklifters, and there was a rope, and everything was ready for
so
execution.
They use a forklift machine.
A forklift machine.
They put the rope around the neck and
yes.
then lift them off the ground.
Yes, yes, that's exactly. But
absolutely barbaric.
Then when I said to my parents that I've been there, and they were quite angry, and they said that you shouldn't have gone there by yourself, and they were quite angry with me. But by the time I was just in primary school, and he was our bus driver, so mm-hmm. we were just thinking that he's done a very bad thing, and he's had sex with someone who's 18 years old. I don't know. Whatever.
I mean, looking, I don't know how they feel about in other countries, but somebody's 18 and having sex is called consensual here. It's
definitely
it's quite okay here, but in other countries it might not. Let's have a little look at some of the things that I downloaded this off the internet. I went to a site called www.globalgaze.com.g-iranhtml, and this goes through some of the things about Sharia law. Now, let's just explain. Sharia law is the Muslim law, yeah? Am I right?
Yes.
And Iran is under Muslim law.
Yes.
The Taliban in Afghanistan was a more conservative and more hard-line variation of Sharia law. They
yes,
were much much more strict in Afghanistan. Okay. The embassy in Iran in The Hague wrote in 1987 that homosexuality in Iran, treated according to Islamic law, is a sin in the eyes of God and a crime for society. In Islam, general, homosexuality is among the worst possible sins you can imagine. Under Iran's 1991 Islamic penal law, the position is follows. For male homosexuality, sodomy is a crime for which both partners are punishment. The punishment is death if the participants are adults and of sound mind. The method of execution is for the Sharia judge to decide. A non-adult who engages in consensual sodomy is subject to a punishment of 74 lashes. Sodomy is proved if either person confesses. Testimony of women with a man does not prove sodomy. So they won't accept if a woman says so-and-so has performed a sodomous act. They won't accept it. So that punishment of death for adults and 74 lashes. Wonder why 74, not 75. Must be a religious number or something.
Yes, there are some religious numbers. For example, if you break your fast in public, which has happened to me, there's 80 lashes.
Oh, gosh. Did you get 80 lashes?
No, I didn't, because it was a terrible incident, and I will talk about it later. But unfortunately, I went out for shopping, and I didn't realize I was chewing a chewy. So, yeah,
really?
I was arrested for that.
For chewing a chewy during
Ramadan, yeah.
Ramadan, oh, heavens. You see, we just realize how lucky we are in the West. Yeah, they might, people in other countries might think there's poor people in the West. They live under this illusion that they've got wholesome lives and they don't. I mean, it's all a question of perspective. There's another interesting one here. Is this, can you pronounce this word for me? Is it the tafhis?
Tafhis, yes.
The tafhis, the rubbing of thighs or buttocks and the like committed by two men is punishable by 100 lashes. If this happens four times, the punishment is death. If two men stand naked under one cover without any necessity, both are punished with 99 lashes. If a man kisses another with lust, the punishment is 60 lashes. I mean, that all sounds terribly, terribly brutal to us, but how does that sound to you? You grew up with this, and this was a part of your life.
Yes, it's very scary, very scary.
Did you grow up living in absolute fear? I mean, I can't imagine what it would have been like, I mean.
Yes, you know, it's quite strange. For a while, you realize that you are the only one who has these feelings, so you are alone by yourself. So after a while, actually, you get to know the world, you go through the internet, through the websites, and you realize that you're not the only one. So, that's quite, I don't know, awful when you see that you're born in a country that doesn't accept you. Even the people, ordinary people, they don't accept you.
This is not just growing up in a community that hates you. This is growing up in a community that wants to hurt you and wants to kill you.
Yeah, it's completely different from being hated. It's completely putting your life in danger.
I can't conceive what it must be like to live on the brink of this sort of terrible fear. When did you realize that you had to get out? Did you realize you had to get out?
Yes. Since I was going to the high school, and I was really, by the time I knew what's happening around the world, and I'm not the only one who's got the same feelings, I said to myself, this is not my place. This is not the where I should be, and I should get out of here, and I should save my life. So all the times I was just trying to actually work on my language to improve my English. And
so you had a go. You realized you had to get out.
Yeah, I realized that I have to get out of this place and have to save myself, because this can somewhere this can happen to me too. I can be at the same place to be hung up or whatever, to get lashed, and I couldn't live at the situation always being threatened with this
is
horror.
Quite emotional for me at the moment.
Yes.
You're listening to Allegro Non Chopper with Adam and Peter. Our special guest is Armin, telling us his story from Iran. Our special guest on Allegro this morning is Armin, who's from Iran and has come to Australia to study. Armin has been telling us his story of growing up in Iran, realizing that he was gay. And he's been telling us some of the fears and things that go through his mind, because he's been growing up in a culture and a society that wants to kill him and other gay people, and just how he coped with all of this. I mean, the time would have come in your growing up when you realized you had to get out,
yes,
when you had to leave.
Yes.
How did you do it? What did you decide to do, and how did you handle this with your family?
I was always sharing this opinion with my family, telling them that I have to go and study.
Did they know you were gay?
Country. No. Actually, my mother is a psychologist, so he had a bit of... I think she knew that I was a gay, because I remember when I was 13 years old, I said, Mom, that Mom, I'm in love with someone. And she said to me, who's it? And I said, it was one of my brother's friend. And he was quite... For 2 minutes, he was quite shocked. And he said, that's normal. You're a teenager, and your emotional feelings will change when you grow up. So we really decided not to talk about it, and straight away with Mom. But I think all this time she knew that what's going on in my mind.
Okay. So, and then, so your mother sort of had some idea, but you never spoke about it.
Yeah.
How did you decide that you would leave the country? You know, the process of going, did you make a sudden decision, I have to go now?
No, it took me so many years.
Right.
It took me so many years. Since I was in high school, I knew that I have to go outside, and I went to the university for 1 year, but I decided to give up.
Mm-hmm.
Because whenever I go to the uni, and there's an office which actually deals with the misbehavior. And misbehavior for them is the kind of clothes you wear, actually, your hairstyle. These are the things that really they're dealing. And I was always receiving some, I don't know, they were always telling me to come to the office, and they was always telling me that you have to change your clothes, you have to cut your hairs, and so many different kind of things. So I decided to give up, and I said to my family, this is not the place. I don't want to go there, and I don't want that education.
So you decided then that you would have to go to another country?
Yes, and but all the times I was just studying English and was planning to go get out of
here. You were lucky because you knew that there was an escape route.
Yes.
And how to get there, and your family obviously had the resources so that you could leave the country.
Yes, my father actually was against me leaving the country.
Mm-hmm.
My father was really, because he was telling me that I have to do my education in Iran, and then I should leave Iran when I'm 25, 26. So, but my mother, they had a bit of argument at these things. So my mother was always backing me and supporting me, but my father was not. So actually, we had a terrible accident that was really awful. I was always really, I don't know, I lost my father 5 years ago.
Oh, right.
1999 by an accident, heart attack. And so after that, I decided to leave university after a year. So probably if my father... As I said, it was an awful accident, but as if my father was alive, probably I shouldn't have done that.
You would still be in Iran if your father hadn't died.
Yes, because he was always trying to tell me that I have to actually stay in Iran and finish my studies.
Now you're in Australia. Are you here on a student visa?
Yes, I'm here on my student visa.
Are you going to try and stay in Australia?
Yeah, sure.
You don't want to go back to Iran?
No, definitely not.
I can understand why not. It's, will you apply if at the end of your student visa, which is for, 3 years, is it?
Yes, it's 2 years. I think that I've had enough of that living with fear for 24 years.
Will you apply to be a refugee?
Probably. If I can do that legally, yes, I will apply.
Because I think you can't go back to Iran to live like this. Peter, you were telling us quite a horrific story about one of your friends who's from Iran.
Yes, he was telling me that, his dress is quite flamboyantly and therefore draws attention to himself, I suppose. And he has told me that he was one time held at knife point and a guy demanded oral sex from him.
Really?
Hmm.
So... I mean, do gay people live with this sort of fear, not only from the government wanting to execute you because you're gay, but also people who know or think that you're gay, they use you, take advantage and blackmail and cause you harm?
And a lot of humiliation and trying to rape and that kind of thing.
Really?
Yes, it's horrible.
There's absolutely, from what I've read on the internet, there's absolutely no support for gay people in Iran.
Nothing, even from the people and, no, nothing.
The only saviour that you've got really then is the internet.
Yes.
It's
quite horrible nowadays, internet too, because there's an organisation which is called Mafazet, which, as I said, is really dealing with that misbehaviours. They go to the internet sites, to the chat rooms, and with fake name and with fake pictures, fake IDs, they try to date with the gay people.
Oh, so they trap them?
Arrest them at the scene.
Really?
Yes, and that's quite scary to go to the gay chat rooms where the Iranian gay guys go. And it's quite scary.
I mean, what about all of the people who are not as fortunate as you in Iran, who can't get out? What's happening to them?
I don't know. I hope we will see during next couple of years a regime change in Iran, because I think that we have had enough as a nation. And
is it the Sharia law that's so oppressive?
Yes.
It's not the Muslim law so much. It's the Sharia law, isn't it?
It is.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really know here. I'm asking your advice as somebody who's lived there. If you were living under general Muslim law, would it be more tolerant? Not sure.
I'm not quite sure about it.
Okay. Because we are lucky here. And, you know, up until recently, people say, Australia, we shouldn't be in Iraq, we shouldn't be in Afghanistan, we should leave the people to the Middle East to live the way their lives that they want to. But now I'm sort of thinking, we can't leave people to live in that suffering.
No, no.
We can't let the rest, we can't let people anywhere in the world, not just the Middle East, but it's happening in Africa as well and other places where gay people are being killed and brutalized for no other reason than they're just gay and lesbian. Mind you, we in the West aren't so brilliant either. You only have to look at our own history. Look at England during the Dark Ages and the Elizabethan era. If you were found to be gay or participating in the act of sodomy, the punishment was you were taken out into the public square and tied to a large block, and then they would use a sharp knife and a series of instruments, and you would be drawn, whereas your chest was opened and your abdomen, and they would remove your insides. Okay? So our own culture has got its own sins as well. But you'd think in the 21st century, when the whole world is moving to greater levels of enlightenment, just to see people living in this huge amount of fear is just unbelievable. Our special guest on Allegro Non Troppo this morning is Amin, who's from Iran. He's a young gay man who's come to Australia to escape the persecution, to escape being killed and fear. And we'll chat with him a little more soon. You're listening to Adam and Peter here on Allegro Non Troppo. Our very special guest is Amir, who we'll be chatting with shortly.
Tired. I said love, I said pet, I said when I am running around, run off my feet, doing absolutely nothing, that is when I tune in
to Allegro Non Troppo across Australia on the Community Radio Network.
Continuing this rebroadcast edition of Allegro Non Troppo that went to air on 3JOY in 2005. It concerns the escape from Iran of Amin, who left Iran fearing for his life just after two teenage boys were publicly hanged for being homosexual. This Allegro Non Troppo has not been rebroadcast since its original date for safety of Amin, who requested that we wait a few years to rebroadcast it so that he can establish a life and security in Australia. We plan to catch up with him on Allegro Non Troppo on CRN in 2009. And we're here on Allegro Non Troppo. Our special guest today is Amin, who's from Iran, and he's gay, and he's not quite a refugee at the moment because he came to Australia under his own steam, but I would think from the story as it has been unravelling this morning, I'm probably one of the most befitting people to be a refugee, somebody who's been fleeing hate, persecution, and just trying to stay alive ahead of the tidal wave of absolute terror that must have followed you through your life, Amin.
Yes, that is.
Amin, you were telling us some of the things that happened to you personally while you were living in Iran, and even though you couldn't even identify or even think to be gay, just some of the things that would be part of your natural person, which they picked up on, the authorities picked up on, that led you to some grief. You were telling us about during the Ramadan,
yes,
that you were walking down the street. Can you tell us that incident? This will highlight to people how totalitarian the law is against individuals.
Unfortunately, in Iran, when you walk out and you don't know, there are so many surprises, nasty surprises that can happen to you. We had some guests for dinner. So mm-hmm. I went out for shopping. It was around 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. So I didn't realize I was just driving. It was just exactly last year during the Ramadan. So I was just driving through the shopping center. I completely forgot that it's Ramadan, and I had a chewy, and I was chewing a chewy. And as I said before, and I suddenly realized someone is chasing me with motorbike, and he signed me to stop. So he just came inside the car and he said, get off, your driving license, your identity card. I said, is that my driving license, my identity card? He said, you're listening to the music at the car, and this is during the time that actually one of the prophets has died and people are mourning, and you are wearing a orange jacket, orange t-shirt with I don't know, jacket, and what do you think you'll do? And aren't you ashamed of yourself? I said, unfortunately, this is exactly, I just came out for shopping because we have some guests for dinner. I came out for shopping and I was not really prepared, and I do apologize because I completely forgot that it's Ramadan. He said, there's no, I'm not going to accept any excuse. Your punishment is 80 lashes.
Oh my God.
If you got that 80 lashes, he said to me, I'm quite sure that the next time you're not going to forget that it's Ramadan and you're chewing a chewy in public like a girl, having this kind of hairstyle and wearing a orange jacket during the morning time that you have to wear black. And he started, he actually locked his motorbike at the city and he said to me, let's go to the police station. Your car have to be there and you also have to be there until the time they decide what's your situation will be.
So you were chewing and wearing an orange shirt and
wearing an orange, and I was not really good. I just went outside for shopping. I just wanted to buy some stuff for, as I said, we had some dinner guests.
And he was taking you there that they expected that you would be condemned to get 80 lashes.
Yes.
What happened?
And it's really 80 lashes because if you're actually doing, it can be anything. If you are smoking a cigarette or anything during the Ramadan, it's 80 lashes. And yes, he said, and then he started driving my car. I was sitting by next to him and he drove to the other direction. I said, where are you going? We're going out of the city. And actually, but all the time I was just begging him. I was just telling that I have lost my father. I've got only one mom and one mother who's just 57, 58. And I don't want to bother herself by telling that I'm in a station, come. And I said, I don't want to really put him in that situation. Yeah. And he said, okay, there's some way, some things that you can do for me. I'm going to take you to outside the city, that there's a place which is called Herbie in outside the city, actually, where I live. And he took me there. He forced me to have sex. And after that, he said to me, you're very lucky that you are not actually in the police station and you didn't get lashed. And if you say any word to anyone, you are the one to be in trouble because nobody would believe you.
And so you were...
No, I just tried. I just locked myself for 24 hours in my home when I got back. And I didn't say, this is not a topic I can share actually with my family or with anyone, especially with my mom. As I said, she's 57, 58, and she had so many bad accidents with my father's heart attack some while ago. And
So you were raped by this person who threatened you because you were chewing chewy, they would take you in and have you get 80 lashes, but instead they were taken outside of the city and raped, and then threatened that if you spoke that it'd reinstate the charge and you could have other charges. Oh my
God. The point is that there is no authority I can actually go and make a complaint because the same sort of people actually ruling the country. From the top up to the level side, so low side. So there's actually no authority that you can go and make a complaint for this incident that happened to you.
And that is absolutely horrifying. That is just one of the most horrible, horrible things I have ever heard.
And the hypocrisy of it too.
I know. It's just, you hear stories and you see things, but nothing is scary and is incredible. It's frightening. It's really, really frightening. The fear that must have be through the gay people who live in Iran now. I mean, that's a horrible story. But the fact that you're here in Australia says, well, you got out. What about the people who haven't? What about the gay people?
I just don't know, because whenever I hear news at the TVs all around the world or at the newspapers, I just start shaking, you know, when I remember. And I really feel sorry about the gay people who are living actually in that country, because when they really hear about this news, they are sharing the same feelings.
To live with that amount of fear you'd end up going mental, I think. I couldn't imagine what it would be like living with that amount of fear. But you lived with it and you coped and you survived.
Yes.
And you got out.
I did.
And you came to Melbourne. What was it like when you came here? Let's have some good news stories, Nim. We've heard about the horror and the pain and the suffering, and we've heard how lucky we are. What was it like when you went from your world to our world? Tell us what it was like when you came to Melbourne, and then we'll ask you what it was like when you went out on the gay scene for the first time.
Melbourne was... when I arrived to Melbourne, actually, I was very tired, and for 2 days I just slept for 48 hours or 42 hours, just slept. And then I went to the uni and I did some stuff. The other week I started looking through the internet to do some gay scenes and gay bars through Melbourne, and I found some of them. And I had the directory. I just went downstairs to the reception. I asked for a directory, and they gave me the Melway. And I found the Peel.
Okay.
I found the Peel because Peel was the closest to me.
Okay. So that was your first... This was the first time in your life that you were going to go to a gay bar or go where there were a congregation?
Yeah, to see hundreds of people and hundreds of gigs.
Okay, so you went to the Peel. Were you nervous about going in?
Yes, I was just walking down to the Peel Street, and I was not brave to go inside for a while.
Why? What were you scared of might happen?
I don't know. I was very excited, and then I walked in and I saw, wow.
When you walked in the door?
Wow, hundreds of people inside. And
what was your first reaction when you saw all of these people and you thought, wow, were you frightened? Were you panic?
I thought that I'm gonna have a heart attack. I'm very excited, and yes, to see gay people. Actually, it sounds to me that I'm not alone. I'm not by myself. I'm not the only one who's having that feelings. So,
did you feel now that you've been out on the scene a little bit more and you've had a bit more experience, do you feel as though you belong? Do you get a sense of belonging with gay and lesbian when you were let's just put this in the context of you being a gay male. When you see other groups of gay men, do you now, places like the Peel and other things, do you have a sense of belonging?
Yes.
Yeah. That's one of the important things where organisations like... We've got a fabulous social network and community network here in Melbourne where people can feel this belonging, held together by incredible organisations like Joy Melbourne. Organisations like this where we try and get people to feel this sense of belonging, but by sharing stories about what you've been through puts into sharp relief how lucky we are here in Melbourne.
Definitely.
I mean, looking back at what you've experienced now, living in Melbourne, belonging and being a part of the gay community, and looking at what it's like in Iran, have you got a message? Have you got some... I don't want you to answer straight away. I want you to think about it. We'll play some music. But there are a lot of people out there. There are also a lot of people living in fear and things like that. From somebody who's been through just about one of the worst experiences I could possibly imagine, to be here, there must be a message in all of that. I mean, we were asking you before a little bit about everything you've been through and what the experiences have been like, and perhaps a message, something you'd like to say.
I just wanted to say especially to the Melbourne gays, and I just want to thank you, all of them, for welcoming me. And I hope to see the support from gay community from all around the world, from Iran also.
Yeah.
I hope so in the future. And we'll see the same support through the Iranian gays, and we will have the gay radios, gay churches, gay mosques, whatever it is in my country. I hope to see that in my country, because I'm really feeling sorry about the gay people in my country, and it's the point in my life to see that's happening in Iran.
You know, when this news came out of these two teenagers being executed, and it was such a huge public outcry and global thing. Were you aware of this? That this was happening a few weeks ago, that these two guys...
Yes, exactly.
How did you feel?
I was listening to the Joy FM.
Okay.
Shocked. But I've seen such incident in my country, and I was thinking that it's going to prove much better, but unfortunately it's going to get worse and worse.
You think?
And I don't know. At last, I don't know exactly what the regime wants to achieve with that kind of behaviors. I don't know. They are just blackening the reputation of a country. And
if there's going to be any change in Iran, how is it going to happen?
I'm not quite sure. I just
Do the government have such a hold on the people that there's no chance of a revolution?
No, there's no chance of a revolution. I don't think so, because people are actually very afraid of going outside for a demonstration because they are being killed and they're being shot. And so
any change is going to have to come from outside?
From outside, definitely. We need some help and support from other communities, other countries. And
this is not just a basic violation of human rights that's happening to gay people in Iran. It's not just persecution. This is almost extermination. Yeah. This is on the same level of persecution and hate and vilification and destruction that the Nazis perpetrated against the Jews.
Yes.
This is just one of the most horrific crimes of the 21st century. And from your personal experiences, what we've read and what we hear, I think we can say with reasonable certainty now that this is really what's happening. It's almost an extermination. I mean, I can't begin to tell you what a huge impact it's had on me listening to your story today and to our listeners. I should imagine it's one of those stories that we've talked about it on Allegro and on the radio station before. But to actually have somebody in here who has been through it firsthand is just amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your...
Thank you very much for having me here and letting me to share my memories, because I really feel relieved and...
Talking about it sometimes can get a load off your chest, can't it?
Yes.
I mean, we wish you all the best for the future.
Thanks very much.
We hope you have a good life and and I hope you stay in Australia and you get everything you dream for, and I'm just so grateful you don't have to live in fear anymore.
Thanks very much.
That was a rebroadcast edition of Allegro Non Troppo that went to air on 3JOY in 2005. We'd like to thank the CBAA, the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia, for giving this edition of Allegro Non Troppo a CBAA award in 2005. There are many other similar stories on the Allegro website, allegro.org.au. There are podcasts from the last 3 years of Allegro Non Troppo. For a moment, I'd like to consider some of the issues that we've heard in this story from Amin. Why, in 2008-2009, is it still such a huge issue around the world that so many gay and lesbian people live in fear and persecution? We're lucky in Western society because we have a more enlightened and tolerant view towards homosexuals. But in other countries and other cultures, this is not the case. Even within our own communities here in Australia, many gay and lesbian people still feel ostracized and still feel persecuted by those around them. Sure, we don't live in violence and we don't live with the threat of execution over us, but it's still a significant psychological trauma that many people go through. In other countries, religious institutions seem to be the main cause of what's happening. When you look at some of the repressive societies where homosexuals are still tortured and executed, you can see how lucky we are here in Australia. But don't let that fool you that it's still a bed of roses. It's still very difficult for gay and lesbian people in Australia. 300 gay and lesbian teenagers commit suicide in Australia every year because of issues to deal with their sexuality, and a lot of those issues are brought around by religious consequence. So please, be more tolerant. Try to understand other people's point of view and let people live together in harmony. Allegro Non Troppo is broadcast nationally on the Community Radio Network and is also available for selection on the Digital Delivery Network. If you'd like more information about the Community Radio Network Satellite Delivery System or the Digital Delivery Network, you can go to the CBAA website, cbaa.org.au, and have a look in the section entitled CRN. Allegro Non Troppo is from radio station 3JOY in Melbourne, Australia's first gay and lesbian community radio station, on joy.org.au. This Allegro Non Troppo has not been broadcast since its original date for safety of Amin, who requested that we wait a few years before we rebroadcasted so that he could establish a life in safety and security in Australia. Thanks for listening to Allegro Non Troppo, If you'd like more information, you can go to the Allegro website, allegro.org.au. That's allegro.org.au for information and podcasts.